installment. Mr. Meyerly, good morning. Good morning to you. You may approach and you may proceed. And as is obvious, I think Justice Frydenberg has rejoined the court. And with that, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Matthew Meyerly. I'm an attorney with the Public Defender's Office here in Lincoln, appearing today on behalf of Mr. Donald Thalman. Mr. Thalman appealed from the imposition of a custodial sanction that was imposed upon him due to a series of positive drug tests. We filed a brief arguing that the imposition of that sanction violated Mr. Thalman's rights to due process and that there was insufficient evidence for the court to find that he had violated probation. Subsequent to the filing of the brief, the Court of Appeals directed some further argument or further briefing on the question of, one, whether that custodial sanction order was a final appealable order, and then the state has argued that the appeal is moot. So we're asking the court to find a couple of things here today. One, that the order for the custodial sanction is a final appealable order within the meaning of 25-1902. And two, that this sanction and this appeal is not moot. And then also the merits of the sanction appeal in that Mr. Thalman's rights to due process were violated through the procedures of the hearing. We think that a straightforward application of 25-1902 does support the conclusion that these custodial sanction appeals are final appealable orders. We think that it's an order that affects a substantial right, that is, Mr. Thalman's liberty interest when the sanction is imposed, and that it's an order that's made in a special proceeding, as that term has been defined in State versus Guatney.
Counsel, when an appeal is taken to challenge a custodial sanction, what's the practical effect on the probation supervision and the jurisdiction of the trial court over that probation supervision?
Well, when the appeal is taken, the question is whether or not, in this case, in terms of, are you asking, does the court lose the ability to continue to supervise?
I'm asking, what's the practical effect on probation supervision?
Well, probation supervision continues. The question is whether or not that custodial sanction is to take effect. And then if, in this case, the custodial sanction did take effect and Mr. Thalman did ultimately serve the 15 days, whether those 15 days can later be used by probation should Mr. Thalman reach the 90 days of required custodial sanctions under 29-2267 sub 3 before any motion to revoke can be filed. So we think that those 15 days have some independent significance. It's a special, and that's why the proceeding under 29-2266-03 is a special proceeding, because the law confers a right for a probationer to challenge the custodial sanction without necessarily interrupting the broader course of probation supervision. A person can't just file an appeal and then say that they're no longer subject to the terms of probation while that appeal is pending.
What do our statutes provide with respect to appeals and probation?
Well, there's the right under Canteras, where the person can appeal from the imposition of probation at the time of sentencing as a regular final sentence.
And then probation doesn't start.
Well, probation doesn't start. The for a felony, I think probation could start, right? Because probation doesn't necessarily, or an appeal for a felony does not automatically suspend the sentence. But in the case of a custodial sanction appeal, I think the if an individual appeals the imposition of that custodial sanction, the only question is whether or not that custodial sanction takes effect, and whether or not the custodial sanction is to be served, and whether or not the time for that custodial sanction can later be used under 29-2267 sub 3 in the calculation of whether or not those 90 days have been served prior to the filing of any motion to revoke. We think that a person has a liberty interest under such that they have the right to appeal under 25-1902, and that the procedures under 22-6603 provide for essentially a special proceeding that they are then allowed to appeal from under Guatney.
And then is it your contention or feeling that the sanctions just go on and...
Well, the sanction, I suppose, had Mr. Tholeman appealed during the 5 days during which the imposition of the sanction was deferred, that may have, I suppose that may have caused the sanction to be suspended had the court entered an order to that effect. That wasn't the case.
What would be the authority that it may have been suspended?
Well, that's not what really happened in this case. I think if Mr. Tholeman had hypothetically filed the appeal within those 5 days and asked for the imposition of the sanction to be suspended, then the court could have entered an order to that effect, or potentially could have denied the suspension and ordered him to go into custody. I don't think that that necessarily would have affected his right to appeal from the sanction, because 29-2266.03 again provides a probationer with a certain statutory collection of rights, and then I think Guatney provides that that's a special proceeding, and that 25-1902 allows a person to appeal if they are in disagreement with those procedures. Our position is that the case is not moot, then, for a couple of reasons. One, because 29-2267 sub 3 requires that if custodial sanctions are imposed, and if for technical, non-criminal, non-abscond type violations, that a person must serve the 90 days of custodial sanctions prior to the filing of any motion to revoke probation. So because of that, even though he's already served the served the custodial sanction, he's still subject to ongoing collateral consequences. Those 15 days are still hanging over his head should he have additional custodial sanctions in the future, and the merits of whether or not this custodial sanction was rightfully imposed could still have some additional collateral consequences for him going forward.
Are you talking about if there was a revocation to occur?
Yeah, if there was later a revocation to occur.
And couldn't this issue be addressed on an assignment of error if that did happen and it was revoked and appeal taken from that?
Well, our concern is that any dispute with the underlying custodial sanction might have been waived if a person doesn't wait or waits until the very end to file any sort of appeal. In State versus Johnson, which was 287 Nebraska 190, there was a question about whether or not that case was moot because the petitioner had already been released from confinement. The court found that it was not moot. The public interest exception applied. We think that this court has the opportunity to provide some guidance. We weren't able to find any reported cases dealing with appeals from a custodial sanction, so we think that this court has the opportunity to provide some further guidance as to the appealability of these sanctions, and we believe that they are appealable as a affecting a substantial right in a special proceeding, and because Mr. Tholeman still faces these collateral consequences. Our position that Mr. Tholeman's rights to due process were violated in the course of this hearing, I think, is supported by State versus Johnson. State versus Johnson sets forth sort of the minimum standards for due process that are applicable in probation revocation proceedings.
So what's missing here?
Well, in this case, we think that what is missing in Johnson, what they say is that the admission of evidence in probation violation hearings is not limitless. The court should not rely upon hearsay absence in the absence of cross-examination unless unavailability has been shown. The court finds substantial indicia of reliability. In Shambly, which was a drug court proceeding, the court found that the sole reliance on hearsay evidence generally constitute a failure of proof. And we think that that's what the record in this case demonstrated, that Mr. Tholeman, who waived counsel and attempted to represent himself at this hearing, comes in, the probation officer comes in, They essentially offer some exhibits, some emails, some positive drug tests, and there's no further evidence, there's no further testimony that is made. And so essentially...
Is it cross-examination that's missing, or...?
We think that there's cross-examination that was missing. We also think that in...
Do you have a statute that says they're not entitled to cross-examination?
Well, in State versus Johnson, what the court said was that the minimum due process protections required at a probation violation hearing include the right to cross-examine adverse witnesses unless the hearing officer determines that an informant would be subjected to a risk of harm if his or her identity was disclosed. I see that I'm into my...
You may finish your thought.
Thank you, Your Honor. Or unless the officer otherwise, quote, specifically finds good cause for not allowing confrontation. We don't think that the court in this case made those sort of threshold findings to not...
That was in a revocation proceeding, was it not?
That was in a revocation proceeding.
Is this different?
We think that this is different. We think that it's analogous in some ways because Johnson and the revocation statutes set forth some statutory rights and set forth some guidance into what process is required when one of these proceedings takes place. We think that that same right to cross-examination and those same threshold findings are still applicable in custodial sanction proceedings. So we're asking the court to reverse the imposition of the custodial sanction in this case. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. List, good morning again.
Good morning. Please, the court. Nathan List, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the appellee of the state of Nebraska. We are not disputing that the order imposing custodial sanctions was a final appealable order, but we do maintain that this matter is moot given that.
What is the pathway to get to saying that this is a final appealable order?
I'm not sure if it would qualify under the special proceeding or the summary application in an action after a judgment. I think it could potentially qualify under either of those categories.
We would have to categorize it as one of those things. Which one would we do it through?
To be honest, I don't recall definition of special proceeding well enough to give an opinion on whether or not that would be the better course of action. But I mean, as I read these statutes, it does seem to me like this is a summary application. Just the entire manner in which all of this is conducted pursuant to the statute is fairly summary in nature. In fact, you're not even required to have the hearing if the defendant or the offender is willing to just go along with this and acknowledge the violations. So, I guess, off the cuff here, I would say that I think the summary application route would probably be the most appropriate, in my opinion. But the special proceeding could also be viable as well. Again, we're not disputing that. It is final and appealable. But again, we do maintain its moot, given that he has fully served and completed the 15-day custodial sanction at issue. Both the U.S. Supreme Court and this court have held that appeals moot when a defendant is appealing from a sentence or confinement. It's been fully served, and there are no collateral consequences.
Mr. Meyerly points out that this 15 days of service is at least arguably part of a larger scheme, points that up to 90 days and so forth. So that would suggest that this is not moot. How do you respond to that?
We disagree with that assertion. I think that's too speculative to amount to a collateral consequence. The U.S. Supreme Court rejected a similar argument in both Lane v. Williams and Spencer v. Kemna, and explained that unlike an actual conviction, which carries a presumption of collateral consequences, a challenge to a sentence alone carries no such presumption because the fact that it might affect some future case or sentencing proceedings is purely a matter of speculation. So as I explained in those cases, it's the defendant's burden to show the existence of actual collateral consequences or an imminent threat of actual collateral consequences, and in the absence of that showing, the matter's moot. I think the same rationale applies here. Looking at that provision in particular, it's purely speculation to assume he's going to continue to rack up violations and hit that 90 days. Plus, that provision talks about revocation taking place in 90 days. only if you have the substance abuse violations or non-criminal violations, and even then, probation may be revoked. So I think...
So your interpretation would make it nigh on to impossible for this court to ever review any of these, would it not?
Well, unless they get a stay, as in State v. Longson, which we had not too long ago, where we had 2 days of custodial sanction. They got the custodial sanction stayed and held in abeyance and then appealed the matter. I think that's an appropriate and viable way to do this if you want to appeal it. They didn't do that in this case, which we would submit renders the matter moot. I don't know what recourse can be given to Mr. Thalman in this case. And again, I don't think the potential accumulation of 90 days custodial sanctions is definitive enough to say that that amounts to a collateral consequence. And they haven't
said
anything.
So the real mistake he made here was representing himself?
Well, no, I think the mistake was not asking for a stay of the custodial sanctions. Had he had counsel, I don't know that counsel would have necessarily done that. Perhaps, but perhaps not. But somebody always runs at risk at the pro se. I mean, mistakes could always be made. And I think that we are going to say that the law just forgives any and all mistakes that occur if somebody's pro se, not the benefit of counsel. Case.
Counsel, do you agree that during the period of time that this case is on appeal, that probation supervision continues and that the trial court has jurisdiction over that probation supervision?
That's my understanding. Typically, a sentence has to be stayed in order for it not to take effect. The fact that you asked has me questioning whether or not it's different in the context of probation. And if it is, I apologize, I don't know. I could certainly use some clarification and a reminder on that, but my impression would be that any sentence, if it's not stayed, takes immediate effect, even once it has been appealed.
Is a custodial sanction a sentence?
Well, arguably, well, it's a component of a sentence. It's an aspect of one. Per our last discussion, I don't know if it's a new one, but it certainly is a component of a sentence. And so to the extent that that sentence is in effect and being served, it's in effect at the time. And in this case, it certainly went into effect and he served it. But again, if there's some clarification that needs to be made there, we would certainly appreciate it. Just briefly, in any event, if this court finds that the matter is not moot, we would submit that he is nonetheless not entitled to relief on his claims. Both of his claims, which are intertwined, allege that the district court erred by receiving and relying on a few particular exhibits that were adduced at the custodial sanctions hearing. But the record reflects that the evidence, all of those exhibits in question, are received without objection. So we would submit that any error with the receipt and consideration of those exhibits was not preserved for appeal. So either way, we would submit that Mr. Thalman is not entitled to relief.
Let's assume there was an objection.
I'm sorry?
Let's assume that there was an objection.
If there had been, then I think that probably takes us into Chamblee and some of the language that the appellant is pointing to. And I think my response to that language in Chamblee would be threefold. Number one, I guess just to reiterate the same, in Chamblee there was an objection. Here there wasn't. And in Chamblee, this court specifically noted that the objections were sufficient to preserve the constitutional considerations. Number two, in Chamblee, we're dealing with a termination and revocation of drug court. And this court explained that when you're revoking somebody from a program like that, similar to revoking probation, it is a grievous loss of a right of liberty. And so that's what gives rise to these additional constitutional considerations. But what's happening here is not a revocation of anything. You're remaining in post-release supervision. We're just imposing these sanctions as part of your continued post-release supervision. But I think that's another distinction. And then third and final thing I would point out there is that in Chamblee and in Johnson and related cases, you have the state showing up as a prosecuting entity. It's an adversarial proceeding, and the state carries a burden of proof in those proceedings. Whereas here, even by statute, the state, as I'm reading the statute, arguably does not need to appear. And in fact, in Longson, as the court I'm sure recalls, the state left. It opted not to appear and proceed. And so I guess that leaves me wondering if this can just take place outside the adversarial context and the court, so to speak, is just going solo, do we really have a burden of proof And that's really the thrust of Chamblee and the concern in Chamblee, and it seems that, at least in this context, that probably is not present. So I think there are a number of distinctions that would be drawn with Chamblee in the event that he had objected and preserved that issue. If there are no further questions.
If this is not adversarial, is it a case or a case in controversy?
Well, it's certainly our position that there's no current case in controversy right now, given that to the extent there was one, it's been fully served and there's no recourse. But at the time that it's occurring below, I guess I would think so. I don't know that you'd have to have the state there in order for there to be a case in controversy. If the defendant is disputing allegations that they violated post-release and that they are subject to sanctions because of that, even in the absence of the state, I guess my impression would be that there would be a case in controversy there. Perhaps I'm mistaken, but that's my impression. If there are no further questions, we would maintain that the matter's moot and that it be dismissed as moot. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on.